The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on The Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
My intention was to bring what's going on right now within the contemporary art field to St. Louis. And what they share is a sense of collective consciousness. Their work is very close to the people.
That was curator Modu Dieng. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, and this is Cut and Paste, St. Louis Public Radio's Arts and Culture podcast. Now, you may have heard there's an election coming up in the United States. Yes, it's true. So let's talk about political art. There's an exhibition in St. Louis right now called Cry of Victory and Short Walks to Freedom. It's part of the Four Freedoms Initiative, that's F-O-R Freedoms, which is sponsoring political art in all 50 states leading up to the election. This one is curated by Modu Dieng. He's a curator and artist who was born in Senegal. He's now based in Chicago. The show includes work from 15 artists. 14 of those pieces are on view at the Project Plus Gallery in the Central West End. One of them is in the Kranzberg at Grand Center. Let me tell you about that one. It's actually an installation that you walk through. It is an emphatically multimedia piece. There are metal barricades, like you might see out on the streets. There's some black canvases, and there's more than 150 placards on wooden posts, the sort you might see at a rally or a protest. But there's no obvious political slogans on any of them. There's some painting, magazine clippings, even plaster sculptures, and at least one wig. You get the strong feeling that there's a political message here, but you can't put your finger on exactly what's going on. It got me thinking about art and politics and whether one gets in the way of the other when you try to combine them, and what exactly counts as political art. So for this episode of Cut and Paste, I spoke with the curator, Modu Dieng, in our studios right here at St. Louis Public Radio, and I spoke with the artist I just told you about, Oscar Murillo, who called in from a gallery in Bogota, Colombia. This podcast alternates between those two conversations. So let's start in studio with Modu Dieng. I begin by telling him some of the many thoughts that were running through my mind after visiting the installation at the Kranzberg. The way it resonated with me, I felt like I recognized it and I didn't. You know, there was a grotesque sense to it. There was a realistic sense to it.
Yes.
And it occurred to me that it's like this is a protest that I wandered into someone else's dream.
Right.
And I missed the beginning and I don't quite understand.
Right.
And there's something disorienting about
it.
Is that part of what you're trying to create?
Well, that's exactly, you know, like I think the best way of describing a piece or talking about a piece is to let the audience do it.
There's a real sense of place there, right? When the viewer arrives, you're entering into a different environment.
Right. You kind of feel the drama. So, you know, it's a protest in limbo, you know, like he describes it. There is a lot of that going on right now in the world, protesting for this and that, here and there. And, you know, I thought it was a nice reflection of society, our contemporary society right now, and a nice reflection on all of the aspects he sort of tried to speak with his work. And we carefully, you know, work within the space to make it the way the artist wanted it to be visible and be felt. And it's a kind of a sense of controlled chaos, because a protest is chaos. And also it's a sense of sort of like giving to the idea of a protest and an art context, you know, because we're talking about an art piece. And it has its own legitimacy to exist as a piece of beauty and as a piece of or cultural value and artistic concept.
And part of the confusion or displacement for the person, the viewer, is we see all these pieces. Some of the placards are right side up, some are upside down.
Yes.
They're stacked together.
Yes.
We can see some of them and not see others.
Yes.
But what I'm hearing from you is that that is all very precisely arranged.
Of course. Yeah. Do you want to see all of them?
Not necessarily.
Like when you are in a crowd, you know, you can only see a few faces. You know, some people are turning their back to you. Some people are walking faster or behind you. So it's the same sort of strategy, you know, because those are placards that, you know, meant to be, you know, representing some sort of like personality or identity, you know. And I think it's still in the making, you know, because it's working with time and it's working within the space.
I'm looking for a job at honest pay, Lord, Lord, and I ain't gonna be treated this way.
You walk around the space and there is this kind of sense of a kind of space in limbo, as I like to call it, as if a horde of people just left all these different placards, you know, after they had, you know, gone on a protest or if anything before going on a protest. And they just, sometimes I fantasize about this space being overwhelmed with people and just see them kind of carry off the placards to some unknown destination. What's important here is also that a placard in the sense of the protest implies that one is protesting against a cause or protesting against something. And in this case, for me, it's vital and very important that that doesn't come across at all, that it, if anything, I am celebrating aesthetics and freedom and form and color and being in the studio and making this work and making paintings. It becomes about painting primarily, and I thought that this idea of the protest obviously is something that it becomes odd with itself. Also in that conflict, you create energy and put the viewer in this kind of position of uncertainty.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you
dying. You and Oscar both speak about the energy maybe in a particular piece or in the space where people are interacting with it. What do you have in mind when you talk about the energy of a piece of art?
Actually, I had a conversation with two young guys who came to see the show from Ferguson, or they were at the protests, and I don't know where they live, but they told me that they were there and that they were. It really reminded them that moment, and they felt a little lost in it, but also they were happy to experience it, you know, in a sense that it sort of expressed what they felt there during that protest, and a sense of abandonment, you know, a sense of frustration, and also not really knowing why they are there and what they were doing there, you know, even though they felt like they should be. And I think, you know, for the artist to be able to capture in general those feeling people might, when people, someone can have in a march or a protest, and through just its his own aesthetic and beauty and making, you know, is quite fantastic, you know.
The troops in Iraq wanna know what they're fighting for. It's George W. Bush re-election war. I've got the Bush war blues.
Speaking broadly, Oscar, is this a political piece?
It's interesting. I mean, I really don't know how to answer that. I think, you know, because I don't want to say yes, because I don't want to be like tongue-in-cheek. I think it's a piece that raises a lot of intrigue.
Oscar, I think your work shows a commitment to an interest in social justice that might be addressed more or less explicitly from one piece to another. Could you talk to me just a little bit about, is there a specific political takeaway that you want your viewers to come away from a particular piece?
I mean, I've been thinking, actually being here in Bogota, it's an interesting question to be here and having this conversation when you come from a place like Colombia or, you know, being here in Bogota. I mean, all these different injustices are at play constantly. I mean, literally at every turn there is an injustice. And so how can art compete with that? I mean, it's impossible. I think primarily, first and foremost, I am an artist. But I think as a human being, I also have this kind of burning energy and anger also. I think that to say that it's rooted within a certain kind of injustice course, it's maybe unfair to say. I think perhaps one could talk about inequality, one could talk about racism, one could talk about social injustice, injustice in within the context of economy, within trade, within geographies, within agriculture. We get carried away with artificial intelligence. And so as an individual, all these kind of situations, they fuel my kind of anger. And so Yeah, I mean, I think through my work then, I try to navigate the sense of, you know, how can I utilize my practice and think that it could make a difference or a change, but I also know that it can't. And I think that's something that I'm getting to grips with, and I'm still navigating and still learning from.
In these times, in these political times in the United States,
yes,
is this a time when artists who are politically active in one part of their lives might want to factor that more into their work? And how does that work?
Well, you need to ask them, you know. And
well, you're an artist. So I'll ask you.
Well,
I'm not
making work here.
Well, you make work elsewhere.
Yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
Do you consider yourself a political artist?
Well, I'm a curator. I'm invited as a curator, you know, so I can only speak of one hat right now, you know, which is the curator hat, you know. So I think art in itself is a political journey, you know, because, you know, making things, I really strongly believe that making beautiful things can make change, because it gives people happiness, it gives people pleasure, you know, it gives people ways of uplifting themselves and getting a better life and having a better journey. And I think it's a political gesture.
You describe that as a political gesture.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this might be a time when words like inclusion and you said, you know, we have artists of all different religions, that is somehow becoming controversial in a way that maybe we might not expect it to be.
How so?
That there's an inherent political content to simply saying, I have an exhibition with Muslims and with Christians and with Jews and with people from different ethnicities, and we're welcoming all of this.
Right.
But it's all...
Of course, yes.
And these are all American artists.
Yes.
This is American art.
Of course.
And, you know, pluralism is not something that's necessarily accepted universally right now.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
But what I'm hearing from you is in an act of inclusion and maybe of creating joy in a tumultuous time.
Right.
That there's a political element to that just within it.
Totally.
Or I march to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore.
The question I always think about is the balance between having some political content embedded in your work somewhere, but not being didactic, not having it come down to a simple moral or a simple point that can be digested very simply. Because as an artist, you're not looking for simplicity. You're looking for ambiguity and complexity.
Precisely. Yeah, precisely. I mean, I think it becomes quite criminal also to make assumptions on what moves, you know, the audience. I think obviously one can only be true to the self and hope to create engagement with a diverse number of people. And therefore, I know that I, as an individual, have, you know, I know the things that fuel my kind of desire to make certain works, but I also want to make sure that that work is enjoyable and that work, it, you know, has profound energy and that has a kind of huge spectrum of aesthetic resolve, and not get too caught up in a message of sorts. And you think at the end of the day, a lot of these works end up in storage or end up in a museum or they end up in a collector's home. And then, I mean, you know, then just becomes a kind of performative rhetoric.
My intention was to bring pretty much what's going on right now within the contemporary art field, you know, to St. Louis. And what they share is a sense of collective consciousness. Their work is very close to the people, let's say. Speaking of the title, Cry of Victory and Short Walks to Freedom. When we think of the journey to freedom, we always think of it as a long walk. So I'm trying to say here that it doesn't have to be, you know, it could be just a short walk. I want it to be a celebration of, you know, the things that we share together. Sort of like a closure to what happened in the recent history in St. Louis, you know, in terms of thinking about Ferguson and you know, the racial divide and, you know, all of the trouble that we went through, the protests, you know, here in San Luis. I felt like this was a moment for us to all sort of sit together, find a closure and let it go and move on to a future, a better future, a beautiful future.
In dealing with things like that,
right.
the Ferguson uprising and
right.
racial strife and disparity, how does art come into that conversation?
Well, art is a space for beauty, and it's, you know, it enlightens us, you know, it gives us light, it gives us beauty, it gives us love, you know. There's a lot of love in art, you know. There's a, you know, like we make beautiful things, artists make beautiful things, and you know, that pleasure can be shared, you know, and give you a moment of peace, you know, of happiness.
Don't you also sometimes want to agitate?
Of course, you know, we are all agitators, but and I think agitating, you know, could be making it wonderful, making it, we can agitate the piece, you know, shake it up so that people can see it.
Something I wonder about, a word that we use a lot when talking about art is timeless, that pieces uh-huh. speak to us across the centuries, that I can have an emotional and intellectual experience with a piece of art
right.
that might be similar to one, to the experience that someone had 500 years ago when they created it.
That's right.
What I wonder is, in creating art that we're going to, let's loosely call political one way or another,
uh-huh.
in what you gain in its topicality, uh-huh. in its political relevance, uh-huh. Do you lose some of that timelessness? Do you sort of restrict the work to a particular time and place?
I don't know. Like, what I can say is that, you know, in this context of the, on the context of this exhibition, like, I have many different, you know, artists coming from many different walk of life. Like, for example, Kwame Brightwaite, who is 83, I think, now. And his pieces were made in the 60s, you know, in Harlem. So, between 1963 to 1965. So, and next to it, you have a piece that was made yesterday or a month ago, let's say, you know, to be precise, here in San Luis by, you know, a young queer artist, you know. So there is a great conversation there we can have within the space. And speaking about time and speaking about relevancy and speaking about, you know, the content and the intention of the artist.
And that was my conversation with Modu Dieng and Oscar Murillo. You know who I am? I'm Jeremy Goodwin, and this is Cut and Paste, St. Louis Public Radio's Arts and Culture Podcast, produced with help from our executive editor, Shula Newman. And let me tell you, the artists you heard from back there, you heard some music from Woody Guthrie, Marvin Gaye, Billy Bragg, Public Enemy, Phil Oakes, The Clash, and of course, James Brown. And it was very painful to fade that down just now, but gotta move on with business. Our intro music is by Eric Hall. And thanks for listening to Cut and Paste, St. Louis Public Radio's Arts and Culture Podcast. You can find Cut and Paste at stlpublicradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cut and Paste is sponsored by Gemma, architects, planners, and designers.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.